Well, good morning. This is Per Fagring, Fight the Empire. And our guest is Mike Rupert, who is the founder of From the Wilderness and also CollapseNet, which you might talk about briefly. And he's the author of Crossing the Rubicon, and I think the book is called Confronting Collapse. Well, good morning, Mike.
Hey, Per. How's it going, my friend?
Pretty good. So why don't we start? Tell us about CollapseNet, and then we'll sort of get into our topic.
Well, CollapseNet, which everybody can find at www.collapsenet.com or collapsenet.net or Collapse Network, it's easy to find, is a venture we started in June, back of this year, in a much-needed attempt to link the people actually building lifeboats, disengaging from a crumbling economic paradigm and the collapse of human industrial civilization for the purpose of sharing wisdom, experience, and connecting people to help them in their efforts to relocalize. And we're now in 54 countries. We have a number of free services. There's a free side. There's a membership side. But on the free side, we have a completely free directory of lifeboat building and many kinds of things people haven't even thought of that are really good. They're vetted, almost 600 entries now. It might be over 600 that we're compiling, because what's been apparent to me with the success of this documentary Collapse that I'm in has been that there is a change of consciousness taking place all over the world, and the number of people recognizing the imperative to relocalize, especially around food production, but in every aspect of their lives, is numbers in the millions. There are many, many more of us, and the growth that we're having at CollapseNet just speaks volumes, proving that that's true. We have a number of services there. We have the best compilation of news from around the world on a daily basis, where I make comments and analyze. We have an interactive map. We have all kinds of new features, and we're giving away free memberships for those who don't have the money, for those who are willing to contribute to our directory or write regional blogs, and we have 12 of those around the world already. So it's that's going well. Per?
How do people contact that?
I'm sorry.
My mic was off briefly. I switched.
That happens to us in radical geezerhood, Bear. That's your term.
I think so, yeah.
The website is www.collapsenet.com. Collapsenet.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's now? Tell me, what is a currency war?
Well, currency war was, as I had predicted and many others, it's and the inevitable unwinding of a totally, hopelessly, completely, thoroughly corrupt global economic paradigm. It is this is a replay of what happened in the 1930s with a couple of major differences. The big differences are is that there are 7 billion people on the world today in the world today, as opposed to 3 or 4 billion then, 3.5 billion maybe. There are no resources to deal with this. It is a global phenomenon, and this is a repeat because of technology at top speed, at warp speed, of the crash that occurred in 1931-32 after the Great Depression, and we're doing the same things over again, expecting different results.
So basically, all these different countries are trying to devalue their currencies.
Well, yes. The issue, put simply, is exports. Infinite growth on a finite planet, we know, is not possible. China has been driving the global growth engine. However, Barack Obama, as politicians have done around the world, have stupidly stuck their foots in their mouths, making promises that can't be kept. And the Chinese have refused to revalue their yuan. It is artificially low in price, meaning that it's cheaper for the world to buy their exports from China than any place else. The main push now is between the U.S. and China, with the U.S. desperately seeking to accomplish two things. Number one, weaken the dollar, which is going to have devastating effects for all of us, even as food prices and oil prices are rising. And to have China strengthen its yuan so that their growth, so that their goods become that much more expensive. The only end result of all of this is an absolute Donnybrook of tariffs, trade wars, protectionism, which is exactly what led us to World War II. And many, many countries are now caught up in this. Some are being chewed up, like Brazil and South Africa, pretty quickly. Other countries are experiencing major difficulties with their currencies, and there is no solution in sight because nobody's going to agree on anything.
Well, if you devalue your currency, it has to be in relationship to another currency. So that means that some currencies have to stay the same or go up. Is that right?
Essentially, yes. But here's the big kick as far as the U.S. is concerned. For roughly since World War II and the Bretton Woods Agreement, which followed, the U.S. dollar has been the reserve currency for the entire planet, meaning if China, Germany, France, any country stores currency, they were storing it in dollars. But with the dollar devaluing at such an incredible rate, the value of the investments that those countries have in dollars is also evaporating. That will lead to a dollar dump, which will trigger hyperinflation. And let me just describe that briefly. Inflation would be price increases of 20 to 30% a year. That's as a result of overstimulated economies, which is what's happening in China right now, and the China bubble is starting to pop. But hyperinflation is 30% a month. That's when nobody in the world wants that currency anymore, and that's what we're standing at the brink of right now. The world's getting ready to dump the dollar.
Well, I know in one of your comments on the collapse net, you're saying that, if I read it right, is that China is keeping the dollar's value up probably because they want to gradually get out of the dollar, but they don't want to dump it too fast and lose what they've got.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really tricky game of walking on a knife edge. The dollar dump is inevitable, but China, being the largest holder of U.S. debt, can't dump all at once. It has to be dumped in what are called tranches. And if the run on the bank starts before China can dump, the dollar will drop down to nothing and they'll lose all their investments. So this is a very difficult juggling act, and there is no way out of this without somebody hitting the switch on the Waring blender and at puree and just having the mess unfold. This is we're locked into a cycle now that can't be prevented.
So it's like trying to sneak out the door before everybody takes a run for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh boy! So if the dollar collapses, what do we use for currency? Do we have an internal dollar that is good within the United States, or what happens then?
No, we don't. But what is happening is what I have been predicting would happen now for almost a decade, which is that by one means or another, whether by a law or just by action, the world would revert to a gold standard. And that's why we see the price of gold continuing to skyrocket. And now there are serious pressures emerging all around the world for people who say that they hold physical gold to actually show it. And we do know that there is now, thanks to great work done by the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, that there's 100 times more paper gold than there is gold out of the ground.
Oh, that much. It used to be 5 times as much.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. But GATT has done some great work. And we also know that gold is leveraged at a rate of 42 to 1. The bottom line to that is, if you don't have physical gold, you have nothing. And it's pretty clear that as the currency and financial chaos unfolds, Europe is just imploding right now, and budget cuts are devastating Britain. And, of course, France is having an insurrection. Greece is already in revolution. The outcome of this is that nobody will be able to trust any currency. That's why the tangible asset is going to become so much more valuable.
Yesterday we talked to an economist named Richard Wolff, and he just got back from Europe. He wrote a book called Capitalism Hits the Fan, and he was saying that what's happened is that the government borrowed money from the banks, then gave the money back to the banks, and now the banks want us to pay off the loans. So we're being hit twice.
Well, and it's an absolute comedy now. Nobody has any credibility. Essentially what's coming now essentially also is quantitative easing too, which is the Fed is all the original bailouts of the Obama administration and the Bush administration have failed. They didn't work, and that essentially all that was turning on the printing presses and printing up a lot of money, which is worthless. Quantitative easing is essentially exactly the same thing, which means another round of bailouts. But the difference now is critical because people are getting the fact that printing money by the government or central banks has a direct impact on their lives, as we see in this country, school districts cutting back to four-day weeks, roads being turned back to gravel, food shortages, unemployment continuing to skyrocket, police forces being axed, fire departments not putting out house fires because people didn't pay a fee. We are seeing the breakdown, the collapse of our civilization, and it's here now. We don't have any more time to wait.
So if the dollar is devalued, if the dollar loses value, then we get to pay off our debts in these cheaper dollars. I mean, would that just sort of lead to sort of a mass default? All the nations in the world just saying, hey, why pay a debt? You know, it's so they all default at once. Then what happens?
Well, that's operating pair only if you accept the same assumption that went behind the bailouts, that printing $11 trillion, that was the first round of bailouts, was going to put more cash in our pockets.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't, did it?
Not
the
my
bottom
pocket,
line
no.
to this is that all this cash printing is serving a $700 trillion, maybe a $1 quadrillion derivatives bubble, and that's all it's going to do, and none of that is coming down to us. We will not see, as a result of hyperinflation, enormous new amounts of cash in our pockets, not unless we have invested in gold or other tangible assets that will appreciate throughout this madness.
Well, a lot of us can't afford gold, but I suppose some can afford little ounces of silver.
Silver is just as good. Silver will work just as well in smaller increments. But even if you can't, I just put up a notice for our members at CollapseNet. Again, we're in 54 countries this last Sunday, and that story's been read, I think, about 1,400 times now, saying that now if you have gold, it's a good time to liquidate some of that to get the kinds of goods that you're going to say 6 months from now, gee, I wish I would have got one of those, whether it's a generator, whether it's solar panels, whether it's a hydraulic press or, you know, carpentry or gardening equipment or something else. Now's the time to get that, because within a very few short weeks, we are going to see drastic interruptions in the flow of goods and services around the world. Maybe a couple of months, but it's this is upon us now.
I know a person who buys gold shavings from jewelers or something like that.
Hey,
it's cheaper.
Whatever.
Uh-huh.
You know.
So, okay, now how does this relate to this this looming mortgage crisis?
Well, I just caught the last end of the show that preceded this one,
mm-hmm.
and the analysis was compelling. The housing market is going to cease to exist. While the White House and the federal government are just making these laughable jokes that we don't see any problem with this and getting ready to pass a law making legal something which was a blatant crime at the time it was committed, what's happening is that states' attorneys generals and individuals are filing lawsuits that are going to fully unplug the housing market. I remember in 2004 and 2005, my biggest lecture ever at the University of Washington, Seattle, I'm on the stage screaming, the whole mortgage mess is nothing but organized crime. There were three times more paper mortgages than there were actual physical properties, and there is no way with this soup being so stirred now that it can be unwound. It has to collapse. But the fundamental problem underlying that is that now at this point in time, there is really no way to value a piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't sell something unless you can value it, which means that the housing market, that the bottom is coming completely out of the housing market, and with that, that will be the equivalent of a coup de grace with a cannon to the back of the American economy's head.
So then houses basically don't get bought or sold.
That's correct.
So if you have a house, you're stuck with it. Boy, my sons are selling a place. The sale is pending, so I guess we'll sign the papers pretty soon.
Let's hope.
Yeah. But what if you have a house where, you know, you have clear title to it? Apparently some of these homes that have been foreclosed, nobody really knows who owns them anymore.
We had a story that we linked to on our World News Desk at CollapseNet, I think it was 2 days ago, That was it was done by a very solid mainstream organization, and basically what it said was, unless you have owned your house outright since about the 1980s, your mortgage is in question.
Okay. Well, let's relate this to peak oil. Somewhere you said that that oil, if oil hits $84 a barrel, it'll kill the U.S. economy. And it's been kind of up there close. I think it's dropped back down below 80, but it goes up and down. So, and somebody else said, a fellow named Charles Schlumberger, he said that airlines cannot profit at $80 a barrel, which is about where it is now.
Yeah.
Although I just heard that airline figures are looking pretty good, supposedly. But so let's talk about that.
Well, that $84 number was not specific. It was never meant to be exact. I was referring there to an IMF report from about a year ago now, maybe a year and a half, that said very clearly in the wake of the 2008 collapse that the effect of $82 oil would be as significant as the effect was of $147 a barrel oil in June of 2008. In other words, that would be a rough point at which people could no longer afford to buy oil. And we are seeing that now. But what's happening now is the dollar weakens. With oil priced in dollars, that's going to inevitably drive the price of oil up. And as the currency wars heat up, we could go in the space of a week from seeing $82, $81 a barrel oil where we are today to $110 a barrel oil as the currency wars increase, because inflation weakens the purchasing power of the dollar. So the sellers of oil have to increase the price that they charge in dollars to make the same amount of return that they were making before.
But would other countries, they might be paying the same price because their currencies are stronger?
Or they have huge amounts of gold. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I understand too that the I think Robert Fisk wrote about this, that the Gulf countries, China, Russia, Japan, and France are meeting to dump the dollar in oil trading, and they will replace it with some kind of basket of currencies, including gold.
Those moves are underway everywhere right now, and several backdoor deals have already been done to make oil purchases out of that. Iran is emerging as a regional power unscathed. Iran is now fully self-sufficient in refinery capacity, meaning that they can make all the gasoline that they need. Their nuclear program is getting functional, and they have become totally, from an economic standpoint, enmeshed with the Chinese economy. So Iran has an enormous amount of power now, and they are moving very rapidly to price. Basically, now it's on individual or two or three country treaties to price their oil in something other than dollars.
Okay, this is Per Fagrang, host of Fight the Empire. We're talking with Mike Rupert, who's the author of Crossing the Rubicon and Confronting Collapse, also the prime mover behind CollapseNet. Well, so where do you think this is leading us? If let's look ahead a few years.
No. Per, I can't look ahead more than a few months right now.
Okay, all right.
This is here. It's happening now. There is no more time for any of us. This is the collapse of human industrial civilization, and this, for those who have followed it and understand it, this is human industrial civilization leaving the bumpy plateau at the peak and starting over the cliff. And where it's going to end up, nobody knows at this point.
Well, let's sort of fill in people here. That peak oil, actually the peak of production, as far as I know, happened around, I don't know, 2007, 2005, somewhere in there.
And 2005, late November 2005.
And since then, we've had this kind of, they call it the bumpy plateau, where oil has kind of stayed more or less level, but it kind of goes up and down. And if you have an economic recession, then that brings the price of oil down and so forth. But at some point, it's going to stop just bumping along, and it's going to drop.
remember that peak oil now in 2010 has been virtually admitted by every major government in the world in one way or another. This is no longer a theory. This is no longer something that's speculative. It's out of the closet. We're looking at a global roughly 9 to 10% decline rate every year. Yet human population is still expanding, and most importantly, any economic recovery is totally dependent upon cheap energy, cheap oil and natural gas, and it's not going to happen.
Well, it seems pretty clear to me that, we've already exhausted, the cheap oil is gone, and we're getting to the expensive oil, and if the expensive oil is just expensive in terms of money and so forth, then we get along with expensive oil. But at some point, aren't we going to get to a where you put more energy into getting the oil than you get back?
Yes, and or more money than it's worth if you try to sell it. Exactly.
So it's a net loser.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Deepwater Horizon was a clear object lesson there. Of course, the U.S. government has been lying to a degree I would have not thought possible a decade ago. It has absolutely lied to us about the devastation caused by Deepwater Horizon, and it's in fact complicit in murdering, poisoning people in the Gulf of Mexico. But everything in the oil industry now says that, hey, within 2 or 3 years, 50-60% of our oil is coming from offshore and deep water. Every one of those is another potential deep water horizon. We have crawled out. We've done consuming the low-hanging fruit that we could pick from the ground. Now we're crawling out on very weak limbs high up on the tree to get the fruit, and every one of those limbs has the potential of breaking.
Well, earlier this morning on Democracy Now, we heard a report about, the state of affairs in the Gulf of Mexico. I think it was Terry Tempest Williams was a guest. She was visiting down there and described, the devastation that is not being reported. It's being kind of covered up and hidden.
Absolutely. And my good friend Dmitry Orlov, who has written extensively about it, calls what's coming is the great aha moment. When everybody goes, here's one more lie from the government or the Federal Reserve Board or banks or politicians and about anything, and just goes, oh my God, it's all BS. This is all a lie. Nobody will buy the big lie anymore. And I really think we're close to that.
Mm-hmm.
If Mortgagegate continues to unravel, and we are looking now at cuts, there's a story that went up on the World News Desk today that says that we are facing cuts as severe as what Britain is undergoing right now, and Britain is mothballing every nuclear submarine, every ballistic missile submarine, their aircraft carriers, their Harrier jump jet fighters. They're cutting 25% of the civilian employees in the Ministry of Defense. They're cutting back on social services and social programs. When that starts happening here, and it's on the way, we will see huge aha moments, and we will see enormous frustration against the government.
Well, let me tell our listeners about Dmitry Orlov. He wrote a book called Reinventing Collapse. Now, he grew up in the Soviet Union, and he's been living in the U.S., and he wrote this interesting book. He says that actually when it comes to collapse, the Soviet Union was able to confront it or live with it because they had basically people were living in low rent or rent-free homes, and they had kitchen gardens, and they had a healthcare system, and so they had all these things that the Soviet Union provided, which sort of insulated them from the harsh realities of collapse, which we don't have here in the United States.
And the Soviet Union also didn't have private property that was over leveraged and fraudulently leveraged and manipulated in a capitalist financial system either. What's clearly happening now is that every bank in the country is foreclosing on properties as fast as they can because they know that the day is inevitably coming when they won't be able to foreclose anymore at all. Get them while they're hot. Boy, there's a pun there because, all these mortgages are fraudulent.
Well, we got a few minutes left. Let's talk about, wars for resources. Can you apply the principle of net energy gain or loss to go, you know, going to war for oil. I mean, the military uses a tremendous amount of oil for all its, you know, weaponry and everything. And if we try to go to war for oil, say in Iraq or Iran, anywhere, that we might actually burn up more oil than we ever get back.
Well, I think that's clearly evidence, and it has to do with oil, money, and everything else, because currently the United States is getting, I'm sorry, but we're getting our butts kicked in Afghanistan, especially as a result of Pakistan's inability to control attacks, and I think Pakistan may have actually helped with that, on supply convoys that can only get to our troops in Afghanistan by going through Pakistan. But the U.S. military posture around the world is deteriorating at a breakneck pace, and that's why the British cutbacks in military spending are scaring the Pentagon to death. So it may not be a question of choice saying, hey, it's just too expensive to go after this. I really think that what we're seeing is much like the collapse of the Roman Empire when Rome was no longer able to sustain its legions overseas.
Yeah, I think what happened with Rome was that the people responsible for collapse were still in charge, so they had a stranglehold on power, which makes you think of our elections.
Gee, you sounds know, familiar, doesn't it?
It's interesting that this year Election Day comes on same as Day of the Dead.
Pear, only you would come up with something like that. That's a good one.
Well, we got about 2 minutes. You know, there was a story in the New York Times this morning. Apparently, the upshot of it was that things are going better in Afghanistan. And I'm wondering, is this a kind of like a little fable concocted to make our withdrawal seem better? We could sort of claim that, hey, we left on a winning note, and that maybe some of the media people are going along with this because for what they think of as good ethical reasons.
The lies are just so transparent now, they make me gag.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what happens. I mean, the insanity, the disconnect, the Orwellian newspeak that is coming out in the press. As remember, most of the mainstream press is corporate owned, and they're all going down the tubes too. So this is just it's just mind boggling. I feel like we're through the looking glass, and I'm waiting for the Mad Hatter to take the stage.
Okay, I think we'll end it there. We've been talking with Mike Rupert, and author of Crossing the Rubicon and Confronting Collapse, a film star, and also the proprietor of CollapseNet, which is something that people should look up. A lot of good information there that it's a website really worth browsing around. So thanks a lot for being with us.
It's always good to talk to you, my friend. We've been at this a long time, and it's kind of sad to be sharing these events with you, but we saw them coming.
Well, let's hope we're still around in a few more years to talk about it some more.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks a lot, and stay tuned for Air Cascadia.